Dana Lash's Absurd Truth Podcast, sponsored by Kel-Tec.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Amen, Florida Man. Several different amazing Florida Man stories out there. My name is Craig Collins, filling in for Dana on The Dana Show. A 12-foot alligator was removed from somebody's backyard in Cape Coral, Florida, after the hurricane wreaked all kinds of havoc in the area and honestly sent a lot of gators a lot of places they're not usually going to go. There was video footage caught that was sent into a local television news station in Cape Coral, Fort Myers, Florida area, Wink News, in which they showed the way they removed the gator from the backyard. They tied a rope around its neck, tied the other end of the rope around a pickup truck, and just slowly drove it out of the backyard. I love the comments on this post on social media on Twitter from the Wink News people, because a lot of the comments are like, man, I feel so bad for this alligator. You can tell that he doesn't want to leave, as one of the comments. Other people saying this is the way that you got to do this. Some people are thanking Ron DeSantis, who didn't seem to be involved in this, but that's hilarious to do, too. But so many different reactions and ways to, I guess, represent what is somewhat typical life in Florida. By the way, this isn't a part of the segment, but it can be. I'm moving to Florida. I actually live in the Midwest right now, and I'll be moving to Florida in the next week and a half or so. And so I hope to not find any gator in my backyard anytime soon. I got family there. I don't think I've ever heard a story about us finding stuff. So I think that I'll be in a gatorless area, but you never know. Another story that I love, also somewhat tied to the hurricanes in Florida. A guy got arrested because he tried to steal a generator off of a stoplight that was obviously without power, and it was being provided by said generator. Cops came to his house because workers in the area noticed what he was doing, told him, you're not allowed to take that. He didn't seem to really care about their advice, but eventually he left. They got his license plate. A cop showed up at his house, and they just had questions for this Florida man first, and he had terrible Florida man answers. Here we go.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How's it going?
Good. Can you step out for us?
Probably not. I'm fixing dinner right now.
Okay, my first thing that I'm a fan of is that the cops ask him to step outside. He obviously knows, based on the level of stress he sounds like he has in his voice, that he's in trouble. And he goes, I'd rather not step outside. I'm making dinner. I'm very busy.
What's going on?
What? You're just being detained real quick, buddy, okay?
Some people might have witnessed you doing some things that we shouldn't have done, okay?
There's a generator on 674.
Yeah.
That I saw that was, that had no lock on it and it was, it had no name on it, so I was, someone set it out.
Yeah, I love that as far as an answer goes from this guy. That is not something that makes things more legal. You saw a generator on the street tied to a stoplight that wouldn't work when you unplugged it, and you noticed no name on it. He's treating the generator outside of his community or within his community like most people treat food inside their office refrigerator. It's like, I didn't see a name. I thought this was anybody's generator, so I wanted to slowly unplug it and then find a way to move it to my house, and I thought that was fine. And then when the workers came up and told me it wasn't, and I tried to ignore them, they told me again it wasn't, and then eventually I went home. I never thought I'd be arrested for this, sir. It's an easy mistake. Obviously, everybody makes one. That's so great. There's no name on it, is something that I hope more people say right when they're getting arrested. And I imagine they actually do. One last one. I like this, too. A guy was arrested in Port St. Lucie in Florida. Apparently, he pointed a flamethrower at police. He didn't use it, thank God. He intimidated them for sure. Brandishing a flamethrower, that's a crime. That's going to get you in trouble, more so when it's toward police. But the Florida thing about it is, why did he have a flamethrower? It didn't seem relevant to anything he was doing. He seemed to back up in whatever video is out there with this story out there and pick up a flamethrower and then say he was going to do some stuff with it and then realize that'd be terrible. And he backed down and he got arrested. But that's an intense interaction. I've actually often said, this is a quote, you can quote me on it, that something that would make me much more disturbed if I ever were to have been a cop was when someone chooses randomly to get naked. Well, in the middle of getting arrested, I don't like the people who want to get naked. I don't know what's going on in their brains. I don't want to be around that situation when you're in trouble outdoors and you think that's going to enhance the situation and not make it much worse. I think flamethrower is the only thing I might be more intimidated than full-on nudity halfway through an arrest. But both are bad. Neither are good. Don't be those people.
Hi, I'm Lillian, an English major at Hillsdale College. Here's Hillsdale President Dr. Larry Arn with a Constitution Minute.
America's founders believed in a separation of church and state, in that the country was not to have an official religion or an official sect. But that did not mean that government was to be hostile to religion, or even indifferent to religion, as many today argue. In fact, America's founding document, the Declaration of Independence, includes both a reference to God as the author of the laws of nature and a confident assertion that human beings are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Far from being hostile or indifferent to religion, America's founders understood the theology of the Declaration to be an essential part of the education of citizens.
To learn more and get a free pocket constitution, visit constitutionminute.com.
This Constitution Minute was furnished by Hillsdale College.
This is the Dana Show. My name is Craig Collins, filling in. Thrilled to be with you. Bunch of stuff to talk about. Find Dana everywhere. DanaRadio.com, DanaLashRadio on X, on Twitter, are great ways to stay connected to everything going on with her. Radio Craig C, if you want to find me for some reason. Let's do this, and that's on all the social media platforms, too. My following is nothing compared to hers. Just a warning going in. But let's do this. The Bret Baier, Kamala Harris conversation is going to be covered a lot by certain types of media. And then it's going to be ignored a lot by a lot of other media outside of them saying that they think it was mean or they think it was hostile or way to go, Kamala, for going into an environment that was going to be tough on her and dealing with it. Now, first, the lowering of the bar to that level for someone who wants to be president of the United States is horrible for us. The fact that the left wants her to win for two reasons. The first one they wanted to win is because Trump is a horrible, terrible individual, according to them. They essentially want to trip the other person in the race and then win a race alone and act like that's some kind of victory. They're the hollow version of a win if they even get there. The second reason is they say it's a whole bunch of historical stuff. You got to have a woman be president at some point. You got to have somebody that's whatever ethnicity she says she is on a given day. Those things all have to happen. And I'll be honest about that part. I don't hate and you don't hate. I doubt anyone hates the idea that someone comes along who's the right person for the job. That winds up being female or black. I know Obama's already broken part of that barrier. Any of this stuff. I don't care at all what your race, your sex, any of it is. I just want you to be best suited for the job. And the big thing that Bret Baier's interview demonstrated the other night is she is terribly suited for this, like horribly so, as far as the ability to lead or deal with anything that would be the typical pressures of being the president. Let's prove this to you a few different ways. This was probably the most painful night of the entire 26, 28 minutes, whatever they sat down for, in which a very significant and simple fact was presented to Harris, and she about brain exploded trying to respond to it.
Rhetoric that people are frankly exhausted of, Brett.
More than 70% of people tell the country is on the wrong track. They say the country is on the wrong track. If it's on the wrong track, that track follows 3.5 years of you being vice president and President Biden being president. That is what they're saying, 79% of them. Why are they saying that? If you're turning the page, you've been in office for 3.5 years.
And Donald Trump has been running for office.
But you've been the person holding the office.
Come on. Matt,
how dare you, sir? How dare you blame me for being in charge of stuff when I was in charge of stuff? Because that other guy who was not in charge of stuff, he wanted to be in charge of stuff. And so he was trying to get the job that I have, and it's his fault for trying to get this job that he did better than us when he was in there. I mean, this is insane kind of stuff that I don't understand how anyone can walk away from this thinking that she did a good job, and yet some people are saying that. As far as changes she'd make or things she'd do different than Biden, a lot of mainstream media is telling you that she distanced herself. She drew her biggest and, you know, clearest version of how she's going to govern and be totally separate of the person she's currently the vice president for.
It's interesting you said turn the page, Madam Vice President. You were asked on two different shows last week what, if anything, you would do differently than President Biden. Here's what you said.
Would you have done something differently than President Biden during the past 4 years?
There is not a thing that comes to mind in terms of, and I've been a part of most of the decisions that have had impact.
Under a Harris administration, what would the major changes be and what would stay the same?
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm obviously not Joe Biden.
I know.
And so that would be one change in terms of... But also, I think it's important to say with, you know, 28 days to go, I'm not Donald Trump.
So, you're not Joe Biden, you're not Donald Trump, but nothing comes to mind that you would do differently?
Let me be very clear. My presidency will not be a continuation of Joe Biden's presidency.
By the way, when she paused for that second and said, let me be very clear, I thought she was about to get like a different version of unhinged mad that she got a few times in this. And it reminded me of a clip from a movie. So real quick, what I was actually expecting Kamala Harris to say was,
you shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
That's what I thought she was going to say. And that's from The Wedding Crashers. That is not what she said. Let's get back to the actual answer itself as she continues to describe what she'll do different.
Like every new president that comes in to office, I will bring my life experiences, my professional experiences, and fresh and new ideas. I represent a new generation of leadership. For example, I'm someone who has not spent the majority of my career in Washington, D.C.
You are radically to the left, according to a tremendous amount of people, have been radically to the left for a long time. You know, one of my favorite actual versions of that part of the discussion, and I'll give her credit for doing this, when Kamala Harris has been saying certain things about how even a John McCain would support her or think that she'd be a better choice than Donald Trump. It was Meghan McCain that came out and said, look, leave my dad out of this, who's been passed away. He's been dead since 2018. Weird that Democrats want to keep bringing him up as the, you know, paragon of what Republicans should be and what they're not any longer. But more importantly, what Meghan McCain said is, if you really keep testing us here, I'll tell you what he actually said about Kamala Harris, and you're not going to like it. Essentially, I think she threatened to spill the tea, as the kids would say. And what I think is fascinating about that is, yes, Harris is so far left that so many individuals criticized her resoundingly. Even ones that now, like Liz Cheney, stand next to her, called her Nazi versions of being a left-leaning fascist. That's how far to a certain side of the aisle she is. So when Harris says out loud, like, I'm not a career politician, it might actually be better for some of us if she had spent more time in Washington, because she might be a tad less radical. Not that that would actually help us. It would still be terrible. Just the degree of terrible might change a bit. And one last thing. I know I've been playing a lot from this conversation between Harris and Brett Baer. It's just they covered a lot of ground, did it in a short amount of time, and Brett pushed back harder than some expected him to. Others did not expect it to be, you know, anything other than what it was. And a lot of like really good exchanges that are probably going to get buried by many forms of media today. But this was a pushback on, okay, you're not radical. You were radical. You're saying all of your opinions have changed, even though you also tell us that nothing of your opinions has changed, your priorities, your belief system. It's all still the same. But you kind of made a decision that questions every single part of that, a pretty big decision. Do you remember what it was?
Immigration. You supported allowing immigrants in the country illegally to apply for driver's license, to qualify for free tuition at universities, to be enrolled in free health care. Do you still support those things?
Listen, that was 5 years ago, and I'm very clear that I will follow the law. I have made that statement over and over again, and as Vice President of the United States, that's exactly what I've done, not to mention before.
If that's the case, you chose a running mate, Tim Walz, who, governor of Minnesota, who signed those very things into state law. So do you support that?
Amazing.
We are very clear, and I'm very clear, as is Tim Walz, that we must support and enforce federal law. And that is exactly what we will do.
You didn't answer the question twice, Madam Vice President. You didn't do it. The first time I asked you, you said that you're obviously against all of it. And then I pointed out that you appointed someone who's probably going to whisper in your ear occasionally, hey, we should do all that stuff that you want to do and that I already did, at least at a state level. And your response again is, but we're not going to do it because it's currently the law that we can't. Even though I thought the whole point of trying to get in positions of power in Washington and other places was to change what the rules are and that you'd very much want to change them to be something else. It's insane that we ever accept that from any politician as an answer to a question. What do you think of this? Well, it's the law. I wish it wasn't, but it is. So that's what we're going to have to deal with. And by the way, anyone that might yell at their radio, not that I think many people are going to do that in response to what I said, my brain thought of it that when Trump says that he's okay with abortion being a statewide issue, you might think that's the same thing as Harris saying that I'm not going to do anything to try to do these radical ideas I have. But Trump actually says he agrees with it. He thinks that the states should have control of that issue. So it's something that individually they will manage and not something that he would ever put a federal ban on or, of course, go back to the opposite way and try to reinstate Roe versus Wade, which is something the Democrats say. That's a different position to say, you know what, it's not part of my job anymore to have an opinion on that or to really, you know, barrel toward that as opposed to, well, it could be my job, but I promise it won't be because we're not going to try to make it something that we have happen during my administration. It's just, it's ridiculous for the second option to be one that anyone ever believes.
Caltech, the P15 stands for 15 pews approximately. It's a great American company, Florida-based company, great success story as well. But Caltech, the P15 is, doesn't matter if you're new, if it doesn't matter if you're new to shooting like Tim Walz, or if you're a seasoned old pro. It's lightweight and powerful. You don't have to compromise stopping power and for concealability. And that's what the P15 delivers. It has two versions. You have a metal frame version and the polymer version. It's a striker fire pistol. Metal frame comes with these gorgeous walnut panels on it. The polymer version's got the gator grip texture. It's just a really nice looking gun. Classic look, classic feel. And it ships with two standard capacity magazines. One is a 15 round with a minimal pinky extension. The other is a flush fit double stack mag that holds 12. Both are double stack magazines. I know it's still the thinnest 9mm you will have. It's the lightest, thinnest 9mm I have, and it's double stack mag. 12 round one with the flush fit that gives you even more ultra concealability. Tritium fiber optic front sight, fully adjustable fiber optic, 2-dot rear, lifetime warranty as well, compact, and it's from the inventors of the micro compact pistol category. It's the P15 innovation, performance, Kel-Tec. Learn more at keltecweapons.com. That's keltecweapons.com. tell them Dana sent you.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's quick five.
That's right, let's do a real quick five if we can. Five topics that I'm only going to get to very briefly. A couple things or pieces of audio that went viral that I thought were hilarious. The first one was a woman, who's very upset because her turkey leg, according to her, is made out of ham. It's not actually made out of ham, but she went viral for complaining about it. Here's part of that audio.
Turkey legs is ham. Turkey legs is ham. The world is a lie. Everything we ever knew was a lie, guys.
Lie.
I was watching a TikTok. This girl said they was at the fair. They got turkey legs. Uh-huh. The turkey legs tasted like ham.
Uh-oh.
So they went back to the dude and was like, hey, why does this turkey leg taste like ham? He was like, it is ham. We just call them turkey legs. What do you want us to say? Pig leg? Mind blown.
Her mind is blown. And yeah, I call it a pig leg if it's made out of ham. But by the way that turkey legs are made makes them taste sort of like ham. But according to a lot of people who know about turkey legs, they're not ham. That's it. I guess I can't do the rest of the five here. Or you know what? Actually, I can do one more. I got another one. Let's do this one. 71-year-old woman who's a pole dancer as a fitness thing. Her name is Mary. She's not actually someone who does that other thing professionally. She said this recently.
A friend of mine said, well, I'm taking pole dancing. I thought, well, that sounds fun. The bug had bit me and I had to do this. I just had to do it. And I always say, if you're going to try it, don't just do one time because you'll come away the first time and say, oh, I'm sore. I didn't know I had muscles there.
Yeah.
You can't be a wet noodle and be on the pole. I think you have...
Okay, I got to stop it. That is the quote of the day. 71-year-old woman saying you can't be a wet noodle and be on the pole. That has got to be true. And certainly the darkest phrase that any father would never want his daughter to utter in any situation whatsoever. I love this. And actually, I even love how I was interacting earlier this week with a buddy of mine about how good this 71-year-old woman looks. Mary is her name. She's not bad looking, which probably is a thing that winds up happening if you find out a grandma went viral for pole dancing. And then you're impressed that it apparently is a pretty good fitness workout. If it were my family member, grandmother or something, I would beg them daily not to do this, to go jog in the park like the typical person of that age does. You know, jazzercise. Do it a little bit faster than normal, because then all my friends won't constantly make fun of me for having a grandma on a stripper pole. But again, she's just doing it for fitness. That's all that is. But I love that piece of audio, too. I'm in trouble with somebody. I just know I am. I got a couple other pieces of audio, but I'm going to save those. I do like this as far as other quick five things. The smallest hill you're willing to die on. What is it? What's the topic? One person said, being called a girl when she's over the age of 18. So she's a woman, darn it. How dare anybody use the term girl to describe her? Number two on the list from BuzzFeed and Reddit, Nickelback being a great band. Some people want to die on that hill. A whole lot of other people don't. Yes, they have hits. Yes, the hits are catchy. Are they a very talented musical group? Well, you got to define talent. I don't think they're the kind of musical group that I would have put up on the Mount Rushmore of, you know, songwriting. But yes, they have the hits. That's fine, too. One last one. Grease 2 is better than Grease. Some people would be mad about that. All right. Tucker Carlson did a great interview, a sit-down interview, where he was, and honestly, that's all he does. I don't think he does a lot of on-the-road stuff. But a conversation about just how bad things could be for liberal mentality, I guess is probably the right way to say it. If Donald Trump doesn't indeed win re-election, something that a whole lot of polls and other things are saying is actually likely. I know for a while they were claiming it wasn't, but a lot of those numbers seem to have leaned back toward Trump recently. You should still vote whoever you want to win. You should not go ahead and decide to neglect to throw that part of the process there. As Trump says, actually, to his supporters, make it impossible for them to cheat. As I like that as a narrative in and of itself. But I want to play part of this because I just thought it was really interesting with a political analyst and Tucker Carlson. The guy's name is Mark Halperin, discussing what they believe will happen or could happen once Trump gets reelected as far as the slow breakdown of lack of acceptance, maybe, or belief or something for those who take in the rhetoric that Trump is a danger to democracy or whatever else they say. Here we go.
Say this not flippantly. I think it will be the cause of the greatest mental health crisis in the history of the country. I think tens of millions of people will question their connection to the nation, their connection to other human beings, their connection to their vision of what their future for them and their children could be like. And I think that will be require an enormous amount of access to mental health professionals. I think it'll lead to trauma in the workplace. I think there'll be some degree of.
Are you being serious?
100% serious. 100% serious. I think there'll be
100% serious. I love the Tucker's first real reaction. 45 seconds into this answer to what's going to happen if Trump gets reelected is mental health crisis, a need for access to mental health professionals, fights in workplaces, all kinds of things. It's like, are you honestly saying this out loud? And the answer is yeah. You know people like this. I know people like this, not people like the guest, but people that he's describing that would seem to mentally be incapable of accepting the idea that Trump could be reelected to the office of president because they believe all the things they're told in media, all the things that at one point Trump's running mate even believed about him when he would call him a Nazi, as is often brought up in liberal media trying to take shots at Trump today. But has come around to believe that, oh, yeah, that's not the case at all. And the whole first time Trump was in office, none of the fear-mongering things they said then, like that we would end up in a nuclear war, actually occurred. So I guess there's a chance that those things don't happen a second time around. But I thought this was really fascinating. They're not done. They're just getting into it.
Alcoholism. There'll be broken marriages. Yeah. They think he's the worst person possible to be president. And having one by the hand of Jim Comey and Fluke in 2016, and then performed in office for 4 years and denied who won the election last time. And January 6th, the fact that under a fair election, America chose by the rules pre-agreed to Donald Trump again, I think it will cause the biggest mental health crisis in the history of America. And I don't think it will be kind of a passing thing that by
long
inauguration
pause.
Will be fine. I think it will be sustained and unprecedented and hideous.
Long pause.
And I don't think the country's ready for it.
So mental health crises often manifest in violence.
Yeah, I think there'll be some violence. I think there'll be.
Look, I'll stop it there. You might think that all this is radical and crazy. And even Tucker is someone who often gets all those labels added to him, reacting to some of this with disbelief that he has a guest, granted a guest who's on Newsmax, saying the things that he's saying. But you can't help but think that there are people like I'll make it a personal experience, an anecdote, if you will, or whatever you want to call this. In my own life, there have been several times where based on what I do for a living, I'm a broadcaster, not just here, but other places. There have been people that wind up having friction with me that makes no sense to me. I don't know them. I don't talk to them. And when I do have a reason to eventually communicate with people, maybe it's people I work with or something else, I'm already at a tremendous disadvantage because of what I say politically, how I discuss certain topics. And it makes it almost impossible to work with some of these individuals. One of the most famous versions of this in my own life, not famous to anybody but me and some friends and maybe people who listen to some of my regular broadcast stuff that I do, was when I was working at a radio station and the news director of the place I was working at came in because I was filling in on a show I didn't usually work on. She said to me right before we started going on air, because she knew what my political stances on certain things were. And this is right at the beginning of the pandemic, by the way. So what she said, she thought was way worse than what it actually probably would feel like today if someone said it. But her sentiment was, hey, by the way, before we start going here, just so you know, if you say anything positive about Trump, if I ever were to get COVID, I would find the nearest Trump rally so I could kill as many Trump supporters as possible. She might not have said it quite that clearly, but that was exactly the thing she said, that she would take it to a rally to hurt people. And then she looked at me and she said, all right, so let's get going. And like the weirdest passive aggressive smile took over this person's face. That's just one instance. I've had tremendous other ones like that, where a salesperson or someone else struggles to be able to work with you and you're sitting there thinking, why? Like, we barely talk. We barely exchange anything at all. And then you do get frustrated or upset or mad at some point because it's unfair. The way that things have been happening are unfair. And Trump feels that way for sure with the way he's been treated. And I think a lot of Trump supporters and a lot of office spaces or maybe a lot of groups of friends feel that way, or just conservatives who wouldn't even call themselves, you know, MAGA Republican or whatever the disparaging word is, but would just call themselves people who would rather vote for Trump than vote for Harris. And then wind up getting as attacked as anyone else, there would be a moment where if Trump wins again, all of those versions of potential conflict could overwhelm a lot of individuals in ways that I think could be harmful, as Mark is saying on Tucker's show. I don't know if it'll get to the extreme that it could get to, but there are a lot of people who just feel as though your fellow man's the enemy when your fellow man is not the enemy. I'll say one other thing about the times I've had conflicts with people in my own personal life based on politics. I don't actually hold any ill will to this day on any of those individuals, because I don't think any of it was about me and them. I don't care. They seem like nice enough people. Usually these are people who are, you know, parents or friends or, you know, something else with a lot of people I know and respect. I don't have any issue. It's at times caused challenges to certain, you know, aspects of my own personal life. But nonetheless, like when you get removed from those things, you don't hold any ill will, because what's the point in doing that? It wasn't even really about you. It's about something else. And I think that's the scariest part of political rhetoric in today's society, is the amount of people who identify it so strongly now that you don't want to hate the politician that you disagree with. That was more normal. That's like at a sporting event when you're booing the team you don't like. But now you actually want to physically boo and attack all the people in the stands that cheer for the other team. I'm a Yankee fan. The Yankees are going to be playing baseball again tonight, and I very hope they win again and get one game closer. They're two games away from the World Series. And I know that sometimes people punch each other and beat each other up because of sports teams, but it's few and far between. It's something that happens very rarely in our society. And yet the passion that some people might have for politics and the belief they have that what happens in the world of politics has a stronger impact on your life than sports does, because, well, darn it, they're right about that. It does. It causes these issues to be crazier. It's just insane. And again, my favorite version of an example of this, and this is so, you know, minute in compared to legal cases challenging Donald Trump and trying to throw him in jail and anything anyone else would experience in this world. But the biggest thing I can say in response to all of this, like the thing that matters most to me about this discussion, is how I hope at the end of all of it, when they're years removed from any version of, oh, I didn't like that guy because he said political stuff that I didn't like, that they look back and go, you know, I probably overreacted there. I probably overreacted here. I probably went too far there. I don't know that we will, but I think that would be very cathartic. That would bring us a lot of healing, or whatever woke words I want to use to talk about it, to get us back to a place where you don't see your fellow man as the enemy, because they're not. They're not the enemy, especially someone you barely know, you barely communicate with, you barely even understand anything of. For you to say or do things that actively harm them seems to make no sense. And I don't know what it is you're actually fighting with. It's actually, you know, there's one other example of this that I love that I can play that has nothing to do with anything in my life or anyone else's life, but it is a crazy woman. So I guess I'll end it on this moment. This younger, I think 20-something, I was walking through Jersey. I've played this audio already in the show today. She sees a flag above a restaurant, believes the flag to be Israel's flag. And so she rips it down, puts the social media video camera on herself. So she tapes herself damaging something of a that she doesn't own from some business and yelling at them about how it stands for genocide. Now, outside of the fact that that's anti-Semitic and wrong and a lot of people would disagree with it in general, it also wasn't the Israeli flag, which makes it even worse when she has to inevitably apologize. But what I'm trying to say and how I'm trying to tie these topics together is that to me, this anger, this rage, this insanity coming out of a complete stranger that's never been to your restaurant, has no idea like anything about your restaurant, but wants to rip the flag down because they think that it stands for something that they think they don't like, even though I don't know how well she even understands the issue that she's claiming to understand as well as she does. It just shows us how you reposition this anger on stuff that you think you're entitled to be angry about because society has told you, hey, you're allowed to be angry about this. When the reality is, I bet you she's angry about something else in her life. I don't know if she had a breakup with a boyfriend. I don't know if a parent treated her poorly. She's having difficulties with family or friends, but it feels like that's more likely to be the situation or some sort of challenge she's dealing with in her own life. Maybe she just lost a job that has nothing to do with her anger being placed on this, something that it seems like it doesn't tie to her at all. But here, I'll play the audio just an example. But I think we see so much of that in the world. And I think that's so well represented in what Tucker's guest is saying could happen when Trump gets back in for the side that sees him as the evil enemy that they're told he is.
Thanks for tuning in to today's edition of Dana Lash's Absurd Truth Podcast. If you haven't already, make sure to hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.